Jeremy Cotton. I've been moaning about this.
Have you been moaning in the bar at 2 a.m?
Yeah, I have, yeah. So I think you can all agree this is a good idea. I was going to, it was meant to be a surprise. I was going to say to Jeremy, first you, on your TV show, you exploit people. He would presumably say, no, he kind of did that. Then I was going to bring out a lie detector. And ask him the same question.
And I can deliver my lie, can't I?
Yeah?
He said that would be all right. Or rather, I said it would be all right if I could bring a drugs testing kit. And no sign of Charlie Brooker, our most amazing person for both of us. No, listen, I'm very grateful. I was going to stand there, but I'll sit here because we'll make it as informal as possible. I heard you say about, you know, radio being my first love, and I guess that would be true. When I mean, God, 12 years on commercial radio, never asked here, never given an award. But actually what's quite interesting is not being involved now, I finished on TalkSport, I guess, 2 or 3 months ago, is that I do have quite a lot of views about the industry. And they said, come and give them. And I thought, yeah, it's all right, nothing to do, it's a Wednesday morning, we've done the show, it's fine. Just to give you a potted version of my radio career, 12 years, thank you, Clive Dickens, I know he's here somewhere, he's very nice to meet you. Started on Orchard FM in Somerset, when local radio really was local radio, I think. I was thinking about it the other night. I think at Orchard, I probably, under the tutelage of the late, great Phil Easton, who sadly passed away last year, the guy who did the Great Eastern Express for 28 years on Radio City, I probably did everything. Produced shows, did shows, made adverts, was a salesman, national sales, local sales. The only thing I didn't do was read the news, and I made up for that by sleeping with a deputy news editor. Anyway, that's it. And really, from an early stage, I loved that interaction. We did roadshow, we did everything, and we got to know what local radio was all about. I guess the TSA down in Somerset was 165,000. I was getting a share of 25, 28, and it was great. It was a really good learning curve. I found myself in Kent, and I met the man who really changed my life. It's quite ironic, actually, because Paul Jackson, as you know, is off to Nova in Australia. God knows how they'll understand his Scottish accent in Australia. It was hard enough for 8 years in London, but... he's got his leaving due tonight in London, and he's off to Australia. But he was at Invicta in Kent when I went there. He'd just been given his first job as a programme controller, trying to escape the shadows of the great Richard Park. That can't be easy, can it, be Richard Park's son and wanting to get into radio? But he did that. And we sort of set about, you know, working. I started on Invicta, did an evening show. He went to BRMB. He took me with him. He called me in, Clive Dickens, one of us, he called me in about 7 months into my BR&B career, and he said, I want to put you on late nights, and I got really quite upset, because I thought that was the end of my life, really, and he said, you are essentially the worst music jock in the history of the world. You can't mix a frigging cake. What you can do is you can actually talk to people, and I remember thinking, that's it, it's all over, late night radio. But what he said to us, I think it's really important, that radio station, BR&B, in the 90s, became a sort of beacon for me, for my career. He said, if we have a late night radio phone-in show that works, that's different, the dial will be on 96.4 FM in the morning for breakfast. And what he did was he completely changed this radio station with a management that trusted him and believed in him. I mean, most of you, I suspect, will know some of it. Les Ross, legendary breakfast show presenter. He had a guy on Nick's Nate now. It was Ricardo then. Did he have a strange name on radio? Were you ever called?
He's called Ricardo now.
No, he was called Ricardo.
So they gave him an Italian name.
Yeah, quite a lot. But this is interesting. 96.4 minutes of continuous music. Memo to heart, when you say you're going to play 30 minutes of continuous music, because I am a listener, could you play it and not interrupt every 3 minutes with a jingle saying we are playing 30 minutes of continuous music? That's just from me as a listener. And we played 96.4 minutes. We had a breakfast show that was different. We had a drive time show with the Barmy Brummons, all that impersonations and different sort of stings and stuff like that. And we had Leighton Live, and this whole radio station, BRMB, sort of grew. And then, of course, they did the now famous Two Strangers in a Wedding, where some unbelievably strange person came up with the idea of getting a man and a woman who'd never met, running a competition, and then letting them marry live on radio when they'd never met each other. I disagreed with the whole concept and thought it was immoral and wrong, and was asked to defend it, late night radio, and I remember thinking, how am I going to do that? And this is absolutely true. We worked out that in Birmingham, 40% of marriages are arranged, multicultural city, so I used to go on every night and go, this is right, you know, it could work. It's absolutely, she was always going to win, to be honest, Carla. She had blonde hair and big tits, to be fair. And I can say that because I'm actually married to her today, ladies and gentlemen. Strangely enough, after that marriage failed, which shocked a lot of people, Carla and I got together and we have 3 children. It's been 10 years. And somebody said to me the other day, can you imagine what your kids are going to have to deal with? You're going to have to sit them down one day and say, your mummy married a stranger and your daddy does the Jeremy Carl show. I'm not sure if that's a good start. But BRMB as a radio station at that point was, it was just so different. They were pushing back the boundaries of the things that they did. You know, I'd been at GWR and I'd been at the radio stations where the Australians, no disrespect, came in and 6,000 CDs became 600 and it was focus groups and it was playlists. That was just a little bit different. And we went from there to Century. They had a regional radio station. They were trying to work out how the Manx and the Scousers would both actually get along enough to actually listen to the same radio station. And they worked out that if they had me on late at night talking about whatever, that might work. And I think most people would know after Century I went to Virgin and Capital and did the confessions for 12 years, 45,000 calls. And yes, you know, some shocking calls, some sad calls, some outrageous calls, honesty. But braveness every time Jackson allowed me to do that, because what he was saying was you can open up the microphone every night and I trust you to do it in the right way. As a commercial radio listener, you know, now, because as I say, I've recently been on TalkSport, that's now ended, I'm filming 6 days a week and I'll have to spend some time with the kids. Actually, that's a plea, I haven't got a job. Thanks. I just think that commercial radio, when I was involved, and 18 years ago I started in radio now, I just get the feeling that commercial radio missed the boat somewhat. I mean, if you look at Radio 2, if you want to listen to a country music show with Mike Harding, you'll get it on BBC Radio 2. If you look at Terry Wogan, before he retired, 8.5 million people listened to him. They didn't listen to him for the music. I met a girl once who told me about Tarrant when I was on Capital. She was 36 and she was devastated that Chris Tarrant was no more. She literally done her A-levels, gone to university, got pregnant, had a termination, got engaged, split up, got married, had a first kid, had a second kid, lost her father. She'd done all of those things and every single morning Chris Tarrant was on the breakfast show on Capital. I think if he was sat here, and you know him because you've got lots of celebrity friends, he would admit that technically he was the worst jock ever to be on the radio, except for you and me. Fair enough, he was dreadful, wasn't he? But he was somebody that people listened to. And for me, commercial radio can be all about, you know, local radio stations being made into big groups, and it's all about business. But commercial radio, if it wants to be hugely successful, and of course it's very poignant right now with the Chris Moyles debate, there's more in the Sun this morning that I know Ashley Tabor yesterday said we're not talking to him.
Yeah.
Depends if you believe what you read in the newspapers. I would simply say that if commercial radio wants to be different, they have to take a gamble, they have to take a risk. It strikes me that your average program controller, and 15 years experience would say this, and Jackson is important to me on that score, it's all well and good to play 7 back-to-back, it's all well and good to have the same DJs with the same voices saying exactly the same things over the same music bench for 37 seconds, and I was there when we had to play 7, and then it was personality. But if you ask people about radio still, you can listen to an iPod if you want continuous music. You can listen to a CD. Just for me at 45, I would tune in now to listen to a person. Steve Wright, still to this day, over time, people will listen to him. Chris Evans, Chris Moyles. I never understood why commercial radio, when it became bigger and the groups became larger, didn't say, let's take an Anson Deck, let's take a Chris Moyles, let's take somebody from television. Johnny Vaughan's a good example, you know? Let's work with these people and let's invest in that talent. Are we? Is commercial radio scared of dealing with people like that? I mean, you know, Miles' rant on air the other day, 45 minutes about not being paid. There's two ways of looking at that. You either go, oh my God, that's disrespectful, that's wrong, let's get rid of the bloke, or you go, you know what, that's him, that's what you get. You get the good and the bad. He is who he is. It would be interesting if some of the bigger groups, you know, actually got somebody. And I mean, I know we're now talking about syndicated breakfast shows and syndicated drive shows. No, local breakfast shows, local drive shows, and syndicated across the day. It would be interesting. Who's that? It's my agent. Is that my mobile? Can you switch it off? Amazing. Do you know who that is?
No.
I was going to make a joke.
Go
on. No, I'm not going to do that. You should be really nice to me. I just feel that anybody that wears yellow socks needs a bit of respect. I just
I was trying to hide that.
They're very nice, but I just, you know, this is just a personal opinion. I think that commercial radio missed the boat. I understood about focus groups and music, but I just think that if it's ever going to overtake the BBC again, you need to be brave, you need to be different. It's the old, it's like a football manager, isn't it? They don't get long, do they, in the Premiership or the Championship, and they play the same format and they don't want to lose. I remember somebody saying that when Tarrant took over the breakfast show on Capital, the first three radars, it went down, it went further down, then it bottomed out. It was 1 year before people would understand. And you've got to give, I think, shows and presenters enough time to actually mould and act. I just think it's a bit bland and a bit crap nowadays. I know that probably makes me sound old and a bit boring, but I just think that if you want 25%, and I don't even know the figures, I don't even know the shares nowadays, I'm out of it, but if you want to actually reach something like we did at the IRB, and we did, then you have to be brave and you have to take, remember Julie Fair, our boss at the IRB, for months was sat in her office going, oh God, the audience is going down and we're getting complaints, but stuck with it, and that thing can work. What I would say about commercial radio, it's a fantastic, fantastic thing, and it has the opportunity to do, I think, so much more than it does, and I just think that's a bit sad. If you want me to be completely honest, I think the tools are there, I think you need to invest in time. I'm not talking about some big time Charlie on millions of pounds, I'm talking about give presenters their heads, say to them, go make a show, go and be a little bit different, you know? I got met by somebody in the reception area, I don't know where he is, he's got a beard, slightly strange looking man, and he said, so would you mind doing a sketch with us in some radio station? What's that all about? He said, I do breakfast, that's my co-host, and she's got a problem with farting, and we could do with some counselling from Jeremy Carr. And I'm like, no, probably not. But I just...
I hope so. You said yes.
I hope so. You said yes. Where are you, sir?
Over here.
What's the basis of the fart thing?
Well, one of us have got a problem with farting. We need to find out through you which one of us it is, but we're prepared to take a test and get cancer.
Get a cork and change your diet would be good.
Commercial radio taking risks.
Not really. You know what I mean. You know exactly what I mean. Invest in people, invest in ideas, stand by it a bit more. You know, Chris Moyles, would you take him to commercial radio? If you had a group of 50 stations, would you say, right, Chris, there's your money, there's your head, do your thing, because we need something different than what we've got.
Would you? Yes, I would, yeah.
Why?
Because I think that he comes with a very loyal following. He's one of those presenters who, most presenters probably don't have as big a loyal following as they think.
I can sadly tell you what Chris Evans' first link on radio when I was in my little cottage in Upcombe at 6:32, and he went, what, no sport? I've never got up to listen to a radio presenter's first, not even yours, but I did. I genuinely did. Mm. And I still think that, you know, that... Why has nobody put Anson Deck on radio?
I think they've been approached and they're just sitting there.
Oh, that's all right. I understand about process songs, focus songs, all that sort of stuff. Christ, I was at BRB and we played Robbie Williams every 45 minutes because 100 people in a hotel room in Birmingham offered a microwave across 6 months ago. We like Robbie Williams here. I said, Angel, let's play it again. But we did, and we kept playing it, but we also had, if you like, a different set of presenters. And all I'm saying is, you know, don't moan at the BBC who push back some of the boundaries. Don't make excuses. If you're moulding into bigger groups, and even if you're a local radio station yourself, be brave, be different, try other things. Well, where can you go wrong? I remember Jackson getting the job at Virgin, and he said to me, I don't have to go, they've had seven programme controllers in 7 years. And he went, because he went at the time when they allowed him to do different things, and plenty of people stuck a knife and said, this won't work. He lasted 7 years. I just think, if you want commercial radio to move forward, then what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to come up with different ideas. But most of all, I think programme controllers and owners need to be braver and they need to take risks.
Jeremy Kyle, thank
you.
That was meant to be a speech. That looked like I'd asked one question and he gave a 20-minute answer.
Yeah, but that's the point. That's what I do. I talk for a living.
It's impressive. No, I'm hiding them. But your message is commercial radio should open his checkbook and sign a really big name from the telly. Chris Moyes.
Chris Moyes is an inspiration to me, actually, because he said you can't go from radio to television. I think you can. That's the other thing I wanted to say. I think that radio is a fantastic medium. I think that you can actually... I mean, I used to do a three-hour late-night phone-in show, right? You can't stop and redo it. You know as well as I do. You've got a new show. Is that live? The pizzas and the beers?
No, that's not live. No,
I'm recording.
No.
So you record that?
Yeah.
Right. But there are live shows.
Yeah.
Right? But radio is live, and it's a fantastic basis. No, I'm not saying just one person. I'm saying if you find a good talent, let them have their head on breakfast.
That is what the couple did with Johnny Vaughan, though, isn't it? They signed him, and his kind of ratings went down for a bit, and now he's doing really well. I mean,
but
that's the exact model that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And, you know, they tried Denise, she came back, it didn't work, the baby, that sort of thing, he and Lisa. That, to me, is a radio programme I would now listen to.
And do you think your show that you did on the Capital,
yeah.
Do you think that there's now no room in commercial radios for programmes like that?
One late night.
Yeah, where someone is allowed to talk that much.
I don't know. I mean, it was very, very different. It was on a music station, and it was 3 hours of complete chat. I guess you know, we were lucky because Jacko and Clive and people were allowed us to talk that long. But, you know, occasionally if we had no calls, we took a song. But actually, it was talk. Nowadays, you probably... Graham Torrens was a different sort of thing, you know, did the late night love with the songs. And, you know, I always used to get into trouble because I get emails saying, Helen wants to say hello to Johnny. And they just think, well, why don't you just ring him up and tell him? You know what I mean? It's a bit... But I understand that's one... I've got a public notice board. Phone him up and tell him yourself. I don't know. But it was very near the mark. But also, if you do a late night phone-in show where there's no agenda and there's no... I mean, I never went on any night and you see you before in your arse. You didn't know if anybody was going to call. And I remember, you know, one call might be a bloke falling out of a lap dancing club in Liverpool, you know, and his wife's just called him. And the next thing might be some deadly serious call from somebody. So it was a... It was like that. And I remember the days of, you know, the Australian... There was... Clive would know this. Snoop tapes. Have you been
by Nick Goodman.
Really?
Times.
Nick Goodman, nice man. In the front row says he's got a question. I've got three for you as well.
Think about Snoop's. It was when I was working at Capital, maybe because I worried about my show, but I'd get them every other day. And it becomes a bit unhelpful. It's like, have you ever played, you play golf, I play golf with you, I'm not asking that.
Yeah.
Bastard. But,
in that champion.
But you know, but you know when you're scoring and you're trying to improve your swing, and the guy gives you 10 things to remember about your swing, and suddenly you can't remember them.
Absolutely.
I think if you have a load of snoops, it's suddenly a bit like that.
I think I was quite lucky because Jacko, in my best Jacko accent, he's doing, I don't need to snoop you, I had to sit through it last night, I'm not going through that shit again. I think it was quite nice because it was just continual chat, which is true, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you know, that was another thing. You know, when radio stations started to process it all, and it was focus groups, and the DJs were pulled in. I think most of the DJs personally lost any sort of naturalness in their act, because do I speak there, do I say this music bell, I've got to get that message over, I've got that. I mean, you get all these DJs doing the same link from the Sun newspaper and doing the old, it's the 271st day of the year, there's, oh, shut up, you're boring the tits off me now. Say something different, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe that control, and this is what I'm trying to say now, it's all about tightness and it's all about get the songs in. I get all that, right? But I've got an iPod. That's what I'm saying. How are you going to do an hour of radio that makes me listen?
Yeah.
If I want an hour of songs or an hour of blandness, I could go somewhere else. That's just my opinion. People might not share that.
I was always told no more than two thoughts per link.
Yeah, but you're like me. I know people to this day, I shouldn't mention their names, Ian Danter, TalkSport, who will write their links. And I'm like, I've never written a link in my life. Have you written a link?
Yeah.
Well, you wrote the intro here.
Well, that your agent gave me an intro to me there. It's largely propaganda about Jeremy Kyle, so I ditched it.
Well, we passed that. I wouldn't worry about him. He's taking his usual 15% the type bastard, but I'm thinking, you know, just you do exactly what you want.
You pay your agent 15%.
I think that's
you
too much.
You better deal.
Well,
I mean,
can I ask you a question? Does anybody in the audience know what Richard Baker and I have mostly got in common? I obviously married Carla, and you married somebody from Capital as well.
Yeah, I married Rebecca McClellan.
Are you still with her?
Yes, I'm still married 2 years ago.
If he goes wrong,
I
know number one.
You're going to call me a bad husband in a minute.
Not
trying to get off your stage.
No, not at all.
I would be a personal thrill to me if you were to crouch down there and shout at me. Call me a jobless, violent moron and tell me to get up your stage.
I think you could shave.
This is like the tame version of the Jeremy Kyle show.
What do you mean the tame version?
He hasn't shaved for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I'm really angry.
Here he gets to get off the stage.
Anyway,
the question's gone, it's your go.
Maybe in the end. Maybe in the end you can say anything off. Yeah, Mal, the guy who plays Malcolm Tucker, Peter Capaldi, has this. People go up to him a lot and say, oh, please swear. Maybe just swear and shout.
I think it's quite interesting. I don't know if I saw this to you about this outside. 6 months ago, I threw a DNA envelope for this bloke, just like that, and walked to the stage and he went,
I saw that.
Like that. My head like Mr. Potato Head. We filmed it 6 months ago. It went on last week. 4.2 million people have done a YouTube. So Jeremy Carl's been here with lovely comments from an old lady, and she went, is it all right? His hair was sticking up, he looked like Mr. Potato Head. And your average sort of student one. Shame it wasn't made out of metal, and the bastard would be dead.
Hey!
He posted that.
Goodness me, that's the boss of a commercial radio station, and he just said something that he didn't like. Who was that? Can we raise the lights, please? And humiliate this man.
Tension, isn't it?
So who was that?
Sorry, Jez there.
Who are you?
Sorry, Jez there.
What's your name?
James Critton. I used to make your website work a long, long time ago.
What are you doing now?
That's a good question.
Get a job, you lazy bugger.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You stand there having a go at that. I'm joking. Nice to see you, James. It's going well.
Lovely.
How's your wife?
Lovely. Thanks for that.
Your kids all right?
What?
Your kids all right?
What kids?
Precisely.
What wife?
Brilliant, Jess. Nice to see you, James. He was bringing you to the website. You work with your wife, didn't you?
James, have you worked with my wife?
I can't remember.
Look, you know the stuff you do on your show?
Right? Yes.
When you are chatting. Every day, says Jeremy Kyle. It's fine, it's on the show, don't talk about it.
You
can get attacked. Rufus Hound has a go.
Rufus Hound, if you cut Jeremy Kyle in half, he who?
Charlie Brooker's had a go, yes,
he's right. Charlie Brooker.
Charlie Brooker
once wrote, and I quote, he wrote two things. He said to our readers, Jeremy Kyle has the eyes of Satan. Watching your cat be run over or drinking a punnet of devil's puke would be preferable to watching Jeremy Carl on the show. I lie in bed awake at night wondering if he's going to come into my bedroom and murder. The very same day, in another newspaper, Dominic Diamond, this is 3 months into the show, wrote, and I quote, Jeremy Kyle is a television god who wears television like a second skin and is the find of the century. And I sort of thought that day, neither of those were right. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, that's okay, I'm just going to do well. Yeah, that's fine.
And one of those medals.
How do you feel about Charlie Brooker?
been my own high days. Yeah, you want to talk about it? Is there a bit of a persona when you're on television, when you're doing the shouting and hacking at people, is it a persona?
I think initially I probably thought that was all me. The thoughts are all me. But I do think for some, you know, if I'm being completely honest, it's a television show, isn't it? And I've said it before, that there's a line in what we do between entertainment and counselling. The people who come on the show and watch this series, they know exactly what they do. I mean, all the people who say, why would they do it? Do they get paid? No, we provide aftercare. Nobody ever has. We've done all this before on Five Live. Yeah, sometimes I think, sometimes I'm there and I'm thinking, but the other thing is, these people, and I'd love to put you in that scenario.
Yeah.
Some of these situations piss me off. And some of these situations, I've got 10 minutes to say to somebody who's blatantly not seeing the truth, right, who's come and asked me for my opinion, so I'm going to give it to them. What should I do? This is what I mean. So, yeah. I always think the people who criticise, I wonder what they say.
No, but what I'm saying is, so sometimes you get genuinely angry.
Yeah,
all presenting is an act of some form.
Yeah.
You're not really. People always say figure presents for yourself. It's not quite true. You're never really yourself. And I'm saying there are some days when you get angry. There must be other shows where you think, I need to get angry for it to be a good edition of the show.
No, I wouldn't say that. What I would say is, I think the British public are, and it's quite interesting with all the debates about the ITV programmes at the moment without going into detail. I've always thought in 6 years that the great British public will buy into you, be it on the radio or television, if they know that you are saying what you feel rather than what you've either been told to say or saying for a reaction.
Yeah.
And actually 50% of the Jeremy Card audience would probably disagree with everything I say. They're almost a lot of viewers, of course, they tune in every day to disagree at the last minute about something they heard an hour ago. But I think if you're honest and say it, yeah, sometimes it might be slightly...
You ramp it up sometimes for effect, to make it more...
I don't know how you see it putting words into my mouth.
But that was what you were...
What I was saying was, I think that I try always to be honest about how I see a situation. I can look back at it sometimes and think, was I a bit angry, was I a bit soft, was I a bit this, was I a bit that. I do it as I do it. I don't actually, and this is the same thing as I was saying about the radio, I don't actually study it, Rich. I don't actually think... I hadn't done television when I got the gig.
No.
I mean, I remember three or four weeks in, sitting in this room with journalists, and this is absolutely true, and this guy said, I do love the empathy of you sitting on the step. And, you know, he was elsewhere counting the money, and I was like, okay. So why did you sit on the step? Is it planned? And it wasn't planned. I sat on the step, and I told him the truth, and they wrote about it, and I said, it's because I actually couldn't hear what anybody was saying in the audience, or read the audience, because I'm slightly short-sighted and going slightly deaf. And that's why I sat on the step. And
yeah.
So I never went into that show thinking, right, we're going to do it this way. Trisha's been very sit on the fence, and, you know, Vanessa did a bit, bless her heart, and now we must be all like, rah, rah, rah. That's just the way I am, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, of course, people go, Jeremy Carl's angry the whole time. And then they meet me and they go, no, you're not angry the whole time. And so they go, what, are you only doing that for the television? The situation would make me angry.
Okay.
That's the truth.
Okay.
Most of them.
The criticisms that you get that you mentioned,
yeah.
And it's interesting that you've committed them to memory. Do they...
As you, Connie, I agree.
That's what?
Never mind.
And you commit them to memory, and the judge... let's not get into defending the show again, but a judge famously called the programme a human form of bare basic...
A man who'd never seen the programme.
No.
Yeah.
But you've been criticised, and these people have made personal attacks on you. Does it get you? Does it actually hurt you when people make a personal attack on you?
I used to say no, and then I think there is a stage where you know, I think there's a stage where you think, geez, you know, there was a particular story in the Sunday Mail a couple of years ago, and this couple had come on the show, they'd had some relationship problems, he wanted her to do a lie detector, she passed two of the three, there was a kiss or something like that, he had an alcohol problem, got counselling, 14 weeks counselling from Graham, did all that. Show went out, he drank half a